You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married. Well, this is a very special time of year. It is the Young Marine Corps birthday celebration. And the Young Marines started in 1959. And I am so proud of you because you were magnificent. They invited you to be the keynote speaker, and you did a speech and got a standing ovation. And it was absolutely the right speech at the right time for these young people.
Well, I love the Marine Corps, of course, and I love the entire Young Marine program because this is a program where it really tests the mettle of these young men and women. You know, ages 8 years old all the way up through high school.
The end of a high school, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. And, you know, it's different, as you saw, it's different than the Boy Scouts. You know, you and I were both involved with Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts.
Well, no, I was not in Boy Scouts.
Oh, you weren't in Boy Scouts. Okay,
no, well, I was a Bluebird.
You whatever that is. No, I know what Bluebirds are. But anyway, I was involved with Boy Scouts. But, you know, it's so different than those service organizations because, you know, basically you go to the store and you get the uniform. But in the Young Marines, you've got to earn everything that you get. And, of course, it follows, Marine Corps values. Okay? So we talk about honor, we talk about courage, we talk about commitment, and a lot of the Marine Corps values. And by the way, this was a birthday celebration advent for United States Marine Corps birthday, 243, I might add, on November 10th.
Right.
And do you know how I remember our wedding anniversary?
Oh, by Marine Corps birthday.
That's exactly right.
but our anniversary is not on the 10th, Ron.
It's not. I always say, okay, Marine Corps birthday is first, and then 2 days later okay. is our wedding anniversary.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing is, I was just so impressed with these young people. And, you know, what we see all the time and what you and I talk about all the time is, you know, we kind of bag on the millennials and we bag on the next generation that are, you know, we say that they can't look you in the face when they talk to you and they're completely just into their phones and their video games and, you know, texting and they can't really have a conversation. And these young people were so impressive. And I do mean young because some of them were very young and up to, I'm not sure how old the oldest was, but could have, been, eight, about, could have been 18,
yeah,
but I know
no,
for sure
no,
16.
No, it wasn't 18, but it was 16, yeah. I think, in that case. But, you know, who gets up at 04 early hours in the morning, right, and gets ready, gets their uniform all ready, and is out there doing PT at 0500? In the morning, and they are working and studying and learning so many things, and it goes up to, you know, sometimes 6 o'clock and later on at 9 o'clock at night, and these kids are going full bore. And you know, while we're at it and talking about the Young Marines and it was the New Braunfels, Texas chapter that we were invited to attend, where I gave the speech, the finest Marine I've ever known and worked with, Gunnery Sergeant Larry Nichols, deserves so much credit, and his entire staff, and including his wife, Teresa.
Yes.
And they're just such fabulous people, donating all their time. This is all give back, you know, for Marines. And of course, you know, there's no former or ex-Marines. I talked about that during my speech. There are only Marines that are just separated from active duty, just kind of waiting to get called back.
Well, I enjoyed every one of them. And, it was just an event that was really heartwarming. And the thing that struck me again was the young people, and they had some ceremonies there. Can you talk about the ceremonies?
Yeah, what did you like?
Well, I liked everything, but they brought out the table for the missing Marine and the missing soldier. So tell me all of the things that implies.
Well, of course, that's a cherished tradition, not only for POWs but for Marines that have lost their lives on the battlefield or in other, you know, other areas while serving for the Marine Corps. And it is an honor to those missing Marines. So we bring out a table.
A round table
mm-hmm. that signifies the cohesiveness of the Marine Corps. We bring out a white table linen to signify the purity of Marines giving their lives for their country. We bring out the tableware, but it's inverted, signifying that the Marine will never eat with us.
Right.
And we bring out an empty chair, signifying the Marine that is not with us to celebrate. We bring out a lemon for the bitterness of the loss.
With some salt.
And the salt signifies the tears for the missing Marine.
Right. And a vase with a single rose.
Correct. And we bring out a Bible.
Yes.
And, of course, you know, the silverware that is folded downwards.
Yes.
So that is a very touching ceremony. And that happens at every Marine Corps birthday. So these young men and women learn the traditions of the Marine Corps at such a young age. But the thing that's really cool about the young Marines is what it teaches these young men and women. Things like self-confidence, academic achievement, honoring our veterans and our first responders, good citizenship, community service, and also living a healthy and drug-free lifestyle. As a matter of fact, one of the important components of the Young Marine program is something referred to as closing the gate on drugs. So very much anti-drugs, anti-alcohol, anti-vice, you know, program.
Anti-tobacco, yeah.
Right. And they have to work to earn those uniforms. And they start out with a 26-hour orientation program, and generally spread out over, you know, a few weeks, and then they learn subjects such as United States. These are the things, I'll tell you what, as an old history teacher, I've said this many times, we are dumbing down our students. They don't learn civil rights. They don't learn the Constitution. They don't learn the Bill of Rights. Well, let me tell you what, the young Marines learn all of that.
Yes, they do.
How government works. And, of course, they learn a lot of guidelines, and they learn leadership skills, which are so important.
Well, that's how we get our leaders.
Yeah, you know, so when I was giving my speech, and thank you for saying that, by the way, I appreciate that. You never know how your speech is going to be taken.
Well, I mean, you certainly could tell at the end of the speech when everybody stood up for you, and I thought that was just very telling because it was, like I said, it was the right speech at the right time for people to hear right now.
Well, you know, I talked about that Marines master, you know, 14 distinct leadership traits that, you know, they become important tools not only for winning on the battlefield but for winning in life in general. And it is so important to teach these young men and women these 14 distinct leadership traits. And I talked about bearing and courage and decisiveness and dependability and endurance, enthusiasm, initiative and integrity and judgment. And a big one for me is justice and knowledge and loyalty and tact. And a very important one that you and I talk about all the time, unselfishness.
And you know what else that somewhere was in there? It may not be in those particular learning places, but you did talk about accountability, and accountability to me is just so important. And to teach our kids accountability is just, I think, one of the biggest things that you can teach somebody in life.
You know, it certainly is. And when we talk about we're building the future leaders, not only for the Marine Corps, but in life. And as I said in my speech, you know, you can go through this entire program, and yet you may not even go into military service. And a couple of the kids that I think you talked about and talked to, and I want to hear about that, but they were using this to gain, you know, these personal traits. I think one was going to become a doctor. I'm waiting for you to, you know, discuss that. Because I wasn't privy to that conversation. I was talking with other Marines. But some of the leadership things that they teach in the Marine Corps and they teach these young men and women are things like know yourself and seek self-improvement. And what I said to them is every single day, think of how you can become a better man or woman. And then be technically and tactically proficient, which is very important, not only on the battlefield, but, you know, in the boardroom. Know your Marines and look out for their welfare. Keep your Marines informed. Set examples for others. Ensure that all of your tasks are understood and accomplished. Train as a team and be a good team leader. Make sound and timely decisions. And like you said, be responsible. Be accountable
right.
for your actions. And I think these are all really important traits.
Well, I really wish that more people would know about this program. I honestly am not somebody that knew a lot about it. I've heard Larry talk about it over and over, but had never been to one of the events. And I would go back every single year because it just was very, very impressive to me to see what these kids are learning and how happy they are to learn it. So I spoke to a couple of people there, and I spoke to the platoon sergeant is a young lady, and her name is Maddie, and I'm going to give you her last name. You have it right. Okay, it's Maddie. Sorry, I couldn't remember. It's Maddie DeHart. So Maddie was so impressive, and she sat at our table at dinner, and I didn't know at the time that she was the platoon leader. But what I did notice about her is how she carries herself and how she comports herself and how she is able to have a really good conversation at 16 years old. And honestly, Ron, I don't see that a lot in the youth that I come in contact with on a day-to-day basis. And of course, I do see it, but I'm saying I'd like to see a lot more of it. Anyway, I was very impressed with her as she sat at our table. And then when she was introduced as the platoon sergeant, then I got it. You know, I mean, I understood because she absolutely is a leader. So I asked her to if she had some time to sit and talk to me. And the first thing I noticed about Maddie is, first of all, she's a beautiful, beautiful young lady. And secondly, she looked me right in the eyes when I was speaking to her. And that is something I can't even get somebody that comes in for an interview for a job to do, is to look me in the eyes when they talk to me. That is kind of a lost art, in my opinion. So kudos to her, because she really had it. And in spades, she knew what she was doing. She has been in that program since she was 9 years old.
Oh, that's
incredible. And she is 16 years old.
What dedication.
Absolutely. And I asked her a few questions. So I asked her, did she want to go into the Marine Corps when she was finished with this program? And she said, no, she really didn't. She wants to be a doctor. And I asked her how the kids at school relate to her, being that she is in this program, which is so disciplined, and what it has done for her. So she said that the kids relate to her really just fine. They seem to think that she wants to be in the Marine Corps, so that's their opinion, and she doesn't dissuade them from that, and she just goes on about her way. But what she said that was so impressive to me is she said, I had no self-confidence when I came into this program. I couldn't hold a conversation, and I fidgeted, and I didn't look people in the eye. And now I have total self-confidence in myself, in what I want, in where I'm going, in what I'm doing. And so the naysayers don't bother her. And, I mean, you just see it in her carriage, Ron, that she had all of those things, and she attributes this program and these Marines that are volunteering their time to gifting her with those good qualities. The second person that I talked to was younger. I'm not quite sure if she was 13 or 14 years old, but her name is Madeline Cordova. And interesting that I spoke to two women there, but the reason that I did is one was the platoon sergeant, and this Madeline Cordova was the recipient of the Young Marine of the Year Award.
And I know we had a picture taken with her because we were so impressed
with her.
Well,
I'm going to put that up on Facebook.
Yeah, because, let's do that.
You know, we were very impressed with her. And again, all the same qualities that Maddie had, Madeline had. But she's younger. She's around 14 years old. And she hasn't been in the program quite as long, so a few years. But still, the same qualities, and she said the same things as far as the qualities that she has learned from this program, and also that she may want to be a Marine when she is done. She just doesn't know yet. She doesn't know what her direction, but whatever her direction, this program is giving her the tools in life to accomplish her goals. So I just was so impressed with these two young ladies, and not that I wasn't impressed with the young men there, I was, but these two young ladies, you know, had the honors that they had for the evening. And so those were the two that I grabbed to talk to. And just, I can't tell you how impressed I was with the program, with the kids in the program, and really with the parents that put them in those programs as well.
You know, there was so much volunteerism there. I was remarking to myself about how all of the decorations for the festivities were donated. Everybody chipped in, and we had a wonderful dinner, and that was, you know, self-catered by them, and everybody was involved. The parents were fully engaged, fully involved with those kids. They looked fantastic in their uniforms.
Oh, they did.
And you know, and I hung out with the regular Marines, of course, and I would come in and you know, talk with the young men and women. I'm not going to call them kids because they don't deserve that. These are men and women. These are young men and women. They are well past their peers that I would call kids, and I just thought it was wonderful. And I was so surprised when they asked me to come and be a part of the cake cutting ceremony, because that's a big deal.
Well, okay, and that
Marine
was a
Corps
wonderful
birthday, mm-hmm. big deal, a wonderful gesture. Appreciated it so much. And you know what? You just had a marvelous idea about donating to the young Marines, and we gave them a sizable donation. So,
and,
you know,
and they appreciate it so much because everything that they do is funded by donations.
Correct.
They have no federal money or, you know, any kind
there's
of
no
income.
Government. There's no government subsistence.
No,
there's
right.
Nothing. No, no assistance whatsoever.
So I couldn't think of a better place to donate some money to, except for to those kids' future.
Absolutely. So to the young Marines in the New Braunfels chapter, to Gunnery Sergeant Larry Nichols, his wonderful staff, and all of the people that support that program, and to the young Marines themselves, let me give a big shout out, a big oorah, and Semper Fi.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
Well, President Trump has another success, and that success is the return of Pastor Brunson from Turkey.
In a Turkish prison.
For 2 years. So, you know, I mean, just, he has brought home, I think it's 19 people from other countries now that were held prisoner.
And we haven't paid a dime, by the way.
No,
okay,
we haven't paid a dime.
No hostage ransom. He is sticking to our primary State Department and United States philosophy and policy that we do not pay ransom for American hostages, which is not at all what the Obama administration did. You don't want to give in to terrorists or to governments that don't have the same values as the, let's just say, don't have the same values as the United States.
Well, I'm really wondering if this is a coincidence or if the timing is because we have the journalist, Jamal Khashoggi, who was supposed to have been killed in the Saudi consulate.
In Istanbul.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, when we were in Istanbul about, what, 6 years ago, I think we actually took a picture right in front of that consulate. I know I took a picture with that police officer, that Turkish police officer that was standing guard security there. Do you remember that?
Oh, well,
it's
do
in my
remember
office.
It. Yeah, yeah. Well, I just wonder if the timing of the release of the pastor has to do with this event, because I think that Turkey wants President Trump's help in finding out about the journalist, and I'm wondering if this was kind of a peace offering. It may not be. It may be just a coincidence. I don't know.
But boy, what a can of worms this is.
This is a can of worms.
Because the Saudis, for all of their issues, they are important strategic allies in our coalition against ISIS.
Well, they are, and we sell them a lot of aircraft.
Oh, hundreds of billions of dollars worth of armaments.
Right. So this is a very sticky situation, and I think that they're going to have to tread very carefully here, and I think that President Trump is well aware of that, and I'm confident that he's going to do the right thing and the best thing in this. But what a disaster and what a awful thing that happened to that journalist.
Well, I think you and I were talking about this just yesterday, and not confirmed yet, but apparently he had an Apple Watch on, and before he went into that consulate, he set the record button on that Apple Watch, and he had, I guess it was transmitting to his girlfriend?
What, to her cell phone or his cell phone in the car.
That was outside the consulate.
Yeah, that was outside the consulate.
And that was kind of like his insurance policy.
Well, I think so. So he must have thought that something was up. I'm not sure.
But I think that's where they have the recordings of him actually being murdered.
That's what
they
say.
Can you imagine how horrific that would be to be the girlfriend in the car and to hear your boyfriend being murdered?
Well, her fiancé, he was actually walking into that consulate to get a wedding license to marry her. So, yeah, this is just like you said, a can of worms.
But you know what? Let's go back and let's talk about something positive, and that is Pastor Bronson being released from custody. He had been ministering in Turkey for 23 years. My God, that's a long time. You know, apparently must speak fluent Turkish.
He must. Yeah.
And, you know, he said when he was in court, I love the Turkish people. So, you know, he doesn't hold anything against the Turkish people, but apparently some serious issues with their government. But congratulations. This is a huge, you know, accomplishment again for President Trump. If he doesn't have all the other things going on in his life and defending this nation and getting our economy back up, he takes, and his administration, obviously it wasn't all President Trump, I think he directed this effort, but look at the wonderful job that the State Department did and Sekulu's team did as well to get Pastor Bronson, you know, out of Turkey and back to his family.
Well, and Pastor Bronson, in meeting with President Trump at the White House, was so very gracious to him. And, you know, he prayed over him. He asked him if he could pray over him, and he did. And it was very touching. And he was just very, very complimentary about the efforts of the Trump administration to obtain his freedom.
And, you know, that negotiation over 2 years... because as soon as Trump got into office, he got right down into those negotiations with all of our other, you know, American citizens that have been in custody in different foreign lands. And, you know, he just directed them, do whatever you can to make this happen. But there had been some highs and some very low lows. And Pastor Bronson, literally within 48 hours, stood the chance of going away to Turkish prison upon conviction for 35 years, Linda, if you can just imagine what it would be like to spend 35 years in a Turkish prison. I can't even believe what it would be like to spend 35 days in a Turkish prison. And going from that to 2 days later being in the Oval Office praying with President Trump. Amazing. Simply amazing. And I don't know if the mainstream media captures the significance of that achievement, not only for President Trump, but for Jay Sekulow and his team and the State Department and their team and everybody pooling their efforts together to bring this pastor back to the U.S.
Yeah.
God bless them all.
Yes. Hey, Ron, I know that you follow all these subversive organizations, and Antifa certainly is one of them. And I saw that the mayor of Portland, Ted Wheeler, has supported the actions of the officers and the Antifa people in this event that they had, that where this man was driving down the street and they attacked his car.
Well, they did more than just that. And to me, the story is a lot bigger than, you know, Mayor Wheeler just simply saying that, you know, he's supporting his police. They tell those police how they're going to act, and they tell those police to stand down. And what I saw in the videos of what has been happening in Portland is downright scary, and it's extremely dangerous. These Antifa people are nothing but Nazis from the early 20s and 30s, moving into the 40s. They use the same tactics as the National Socialist Party did in Germany and the fascists. It's so funny they're called anti-fascists because they act just like Mussolini's fascists. The black shirts, Hitler's was the brown shirts prior to World War II. And people are going to get hurt and people are going to get killed when you tell the police to stand down. Here's a great example is that man that was in that car, and I did see that film strip where they surrounded that man, they started beating that car with a baton, which is a felony to possess, and the poor old guy, he panics, he hits the gas pedal, and he goes flying down the street. Let me tell you what, as a person that works these cases all the time, if he had run down anybody, the people that would have caused that would have been the mayor and his own police officers for creating a situation of exigency that caused an injury to another person when they had a community caretaking responsibility to stop that from happening. You remember a couple of months ago, Linda, when I was invited to go to Long Beach and we had,
yes,
what, 50 chiefs of police, and administrators from the California State University system. They brought me in to teach them about subversive organizations and the proactive enforcement of that.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah.
And boy, that's a tough crowd, okay? Because you're talking, there was, almost as much brass there as you find on Marine Corps birthday, okay? And plus, some very skeptical university administrators. And I told them, I said, you cannot allow this to happen. They will burn your campuses to the ground. They will injure and kill your students if they don't injure and kill police officers. And it will all be your fault if you let this happen. And that's what's going on in these cities. And it's just disgraceful. And these mayors have got to stop doing what they're doing. And they have got to empower their police officers to take care of business here.
Well, and they don't. And this is just really sad across the country. But in this particular instance, this was an older gentleman, and they broke his window and, you know,
and damaged his car.
Yes. And I put myself in that place of him. If I was in my car and a group of 100 people started hitting my car and breaking my window, I would be terrified. I would be afraid that they were going to pull me out and kill me. So I don't blame him for putting his foot on the gas. Then they called, you know, had him in. I thought that they were going to arrest him for, you know, attempting to run people over when all he wanted to do was get out of there because he was terrified.
Exactly. There was a man that was just scared out of his wits, and who can blame him? When you see the video, you see how scary that was.
And the police were a block away
watching. Oh, I tell you what, as an old cop war dog, to watch something like that happen, and I watched that happen in the city of San Jose at the Trump rally, before President Trump was elected to office, where Antifa and those Black Lives Matter crowds and those anarchists chased that one poor woman down. Do you remember that? And they threw eggs at her,
yes,
and they assaulted her, and those police officers stood by and did absolutely nothing because they were ordered to stand down by the chief of police there. That would have never happened in the years that I was at the San Jose Police Department. Absolutely despicable and disgraceful. And people are going to get injured and people are going to get killed as a result of that. That's negligence. It goes far beyond negligence.
Well, I guess that's what it's going to take, because they're so far left that they're letting these people get away with it. And they're risking the public's safety, and that's wrong, because the police are there and our government officials are there. Their number one responsibility in their jobs is the safety of the public.
These people, these groups like Antifa and people on the alt-right and these Occupy people, these subversives, these communists, these Marxists, they come to these protests dressed for battle. They've got helmets on, they've got shields, they've got things to hit people with, they've got chains, they have chemical agents, they have frozen water bottles, urine bottles, all of these things, things to start fires, and I'm telling you, this has got to stop.
So, you know, we haven't talked about the Mueller investigation for a while. And the thing is, it's been pretty quiet, and I think that that's because they're kind of toning things down before the election, and they're not going to say a lot right now. But the thing that I think is really interesting is some of these people are coming in and having to testify in front of the Senate, and one of them is the attorney Baker. And they've
found
out...
He was one of the chief attorneys, as a matter of fact, for Department of Justice in the FBI.
And they have found out a lot of information. And I guess, from what I'm understanding, a lot of information is going to be coming out. But if I can put it in a nutshell the way that I understand it, it is basically that they had this all set up to frame President Trump. They had it set up in two different ways. If Hillary won the election, then... And President Trump, or he wouldn't be president then, but Trump would not concede to Hillary, they were going to have all this stuff about Russia and, you know, kind of knock him off his game so that he'd concede to Hillary. That's the first scenario. But the scenario that they didn't expect was that Trump won and is the president. So then that was their plan B, I think, that they talked about in the conversations with Lisa Page and Struck. Peter Strzok.
Well, I think that was the insurance policy.
That was the insurance
policy.
And
you know, I think something else, now this is complete speculation on my part, but from the way that I've seen this thing size up, if Trump would not have won the election, they were still going to do him anyway.
They were.
Because they were going to make sure that he would never come back and be a candidate again, because they knew his personality.
Yes.
You know, win, and never give up. And he would have been another candidate. You watch. I mean, if that would have happened, he would have been a candidate in 2020. And they did not want to take that chance. And I think that was their insurance policy. But isn't it interesting? Rosenstein does not want to go under oath. And then other people, especially with Fusion,
yes,
that put that dossier together, they're taking the Fifth Amendment.
Well, they're taking the Fifth, and they've got testimonies that are conflicting one with the other. But the thing I think is the attorney Baker, he had a lot to say. And this whole scenario where they say that Rosenstein had said that he would wear a wire and they would try to get President Trump on the 25th Amendment.
Yeah, but that's all BS. I mean, there is so much that you have to be able to prove to have a president removed with the 25th Amendment.
I understand, but Rosenstein says that was a joke or that isn't true.
I don't believe that.
But Baker says, no, it wasn't. So, interesting that somebody in that high of a position in our government has obstructed giving documents to the Senate and now will not testify in front of the Senate. And those people in the Senate are his superiors.
Right.
So something is just really not smelling good in Denmark here.
Well, you know, I'm still trying to figure Washington, D.C. out, and all of the conniving and the conspiracies and the backstabbing and the lying and people taking the Fifth Amendment and all the accusations that are unsupported. This whole Brett Kavanaugh thing left a huge indelible mark in my brain with regards to, look how close we are coming to losing our civil rights, right?
Of due process
and, due process. And I'm telling you, these are scary times for the United States, and I am hoping that Republican moderates and libertarians,
yeah,
you know, libertarians and independents, mm-hmm, they wake the hell up. And they realize that if you don't stop these leftist socialists right now, what is going to happen if they get control of the Congress and the Senate and, God help us, the presidency? They are going to do exactly what they've talked about doing already, and that is making new laws and then packing the Supreme Court,
yes,
with even more justices so that the United States would never recover. People need to understand just how scary and how possible these things are, and I hope they get out there and they vote conservative.
Yes.
I want to see a red wave out there. I'm scared to see what'll happen if we don't have a red wave in these midterm elections and also in 2020. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Thank you so much for joining us Monday through Friday evenings for our engaging and lively coffee conversation.
But now there's more. We would love for you to join us on Facebook at Talking While Married, where we post the pictures of the things that we talk about.
That's right. We'd love to have you both follow us and friend us on Facebook, Talking While Married.
We'll see you there, and thanks for joining us for coffee.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. there haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, I want to talk about a few little good news things and dribs and drabs of different pieces of information that are rolling around in my head.
Drib and drab away.
Yes, okay. So the first one is our Secretary of Defense, Mad Dog Mattis, has ordered our Air Force to absolutely have our fighters at readiness to an 80% level, which
right.
they have not had
for
years.
And I think it's aircraft all the way across the board with all the armed services. But suffice it to say, pretty surprising the low readiness statistics that we see coming out of the Department of Defense. You know, for instance, I think the F-22, which is our Raptor, which is, you know, one of our stealthiest badasses planes, is only at what? Like something around 49%?
Yes.
And then the F-18 Hornet, which is the mainstay, you know, of our battle force with respect to jets are concerned. What is that down
about
to?
About 50%.
Holy cow. Yeah. So, you know, let's just say, theoretically, we get into a shootout with somebody and they shoot down a few of our planes. Where are we going to get those other planes? Right? So it's all about parts, and it's about parts and pilots, Linda, and we got to have plenty of both of those.
Well, and we haven't, and under the Obama administration, our Air Force readiness has been just decimated. And out of 12 planes in 2011 to 2016 that they reviewed, 9 of those were not.
No, I remember that.
Yeah.
No, you can't have that. You can't have a strategic battle force and have that level of planes, you know, sitting in the hangar, and they can't be used.
Well, the good news is that number is coming up. So the numbers that we just spoke about are actually already better.
Because of the expenditures.
Exactly.
And that had a lot to do with President Trump. I think, I don't know if it was quite $800 billion, but pretty darn close to it. In strategic defense spending, and we need every penny of that, not only to supplement our aircraft, build new aircraft, make sure we have parts and pilots, but also to, you know, pay our men and women, you know, our soldiers, the Air Force, you know, Navy, and Marine Corps and Coast Guard. We've got to pay those people. We've got to give those people some money and raises. And thank them for their service, for God's sakes.
And,
it's part and parcel of that whole thing.
They just did get a raise, which is
absolutely wonderful. Well, they needed a raise.
Yeah.
You know, they hadn't had a raise forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's our, again, that's all the population of our strategic battle force.
Well, I'd like to see our readiness be at 80% or over. I mean, I'd love to see it at 100%. But I think that we need to be ready in today's world all the time. And I really appreciate what they're doing for the American people behind the scenes that nobody talks about, nobody hears about, but things are getting done. So another thing that I thought was really interesting, just a kind of a wild swing away from that subject, but the first transgender woman is the world champion cyclist now. And so how do you feel about a guy becoming a woman and competing as a woman in a huge event like this?
Well, you know, okay, so you're talking to an old dog athlete. I look at this two different ways, and this is why this is tricky stuff, Lynn, because number one, you've got civil rights, and just lay the civil rights aside. Let's just talk about physiology and body stature. A man's body stature, their muscularity is different than a woman's. Okay?
Yes.
And that's why, I mean, let's just be honest about it. I mean, this is not even something that should be argued. You take a look, and I'm just going to talk about track and field because that's a pretty close sport to cycling. They're on a bicycle, but basically they're running on a vehicle.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And you take a look at the all of the world records of men, and then you take in those events, the 100, the 2, I was a sprinter, the 100, the 2, the 400 meters, the 800 meters, the 1500 meters, the mile, things like that, and then you take a look at the world records for the women, and it's a completely distinct as far as times are concerned. And that's because the musculature and what we would call mesomorphs of men is completely different than the statue of the mesomorph of a woman.
Well, according to what I read, this person is still a biological male. So, I'm not sure that I feel that this is fair. And the argument on the other side is that it gets compared to when people used to segregate and say, well, blacks can't run, or women can't run.
No, this is totally different.
It is different. It is different. And, you know, the fact is, no matter how you look at it, God created men and women differently, and that's just something that nobody can argue. Now, if somebody is a black male or a white male or a Hispanic male, God still created those people as males. So there should be no segregation based on
Correct.
Race or any of those kind of things. But this is different to me, and I understand both sides of it, but I still don't think that it was fair to the women.
Well, you know something, Linda, and I apologize because I didn't capture it, and now you've said it twice, and I did not capture you said that he continues to be a biological male. So you know what? I could care less what he thinks he is. Okay, and if he's getting estrogen, if he's still got the plumbing, he's a man and he's not a woman, and he should not be allowed to compete in women's sports.
Well, what I read is that he is a biological male who identifies as a female, and that's
going to change the whole paradigm of athletics.
I disagree that somebody that can just identify with what they want to say that they are, that's what they are. I know that people are trying to say that that's how it should be, especially in our colleges and our schools and our governments, but that's not the case.
Well, you know, Linda,
saying so doesn't make it so.
Yeah, you know what? I identify as being a world champion bull rider. That doesn't make me one.
I can confirm that, Ron. That does not make you one.
And that's why we raise them and compete with them, and we don't ride them.
No. Here's another one of my dribs and drabs that I think was really interesting. Mount Etna in Sicily is Italy's most active volcano. In fact, I think it's Europe's most active volcano, or one of them. And it is slowly, or maybe not so slowly, sliding into the Mediterranean Sea. And it moved like 4 centimeters in just a day. The flanks are okay, but this one side is slipping. And the big worry, Ron, is that if that slips and it crumbles into the sea, it could create a huge tsunami that would affect much of Europe.
But wouldn't the whole thing have to collapse into the sea for something like that to happen, rather than it just gradually moving towards the Tyrrhenian Ocean, or the Tyrrhenian Sea, actually, there, the lower or the upper Mediterranean, wouldn't that, I mean, it's not going to just topple over.
No, it's not going to topple over, but if you remember with, say, Mount St. Helens, one side blew out, and look at the catastrophe that caused.
Oh, no doubt about that.
So, it would get to a point where it has moved enough and gravity would pull it and it would collapse into the sea. And that would create a huge tsunami.
And that's what they're saying right now?
That's what they're very worried about because of the movement that's been happening with this volcano. And it's not seismic movement. It's more gravity movement.
So what are they saying is causing the gravitational movement?
Gravity.
Just pure gravity. No, you know what I'm... Okay, you're trying to be...
I'm not
very funny, Linda. Okay. What I'm talking about is... Is it filling up with lava? Is the lava causing a balance problem with it where it's starting to move slowly towards the ocean? I try to look at these things more scientifically, Linda.
It can be compared to a very slow earthquake.
I'm getting a new talking while Barry partner.
It can be to a very slow earthquake that's called a slow slip event. And it's just over time that the horizontal movement... happens, and then it gets to a point where it collapses. It can't hold itself up anymore, and that is the fear here. Nobody's saying that it's going to happen tomorrow, but it is one of the world's most active volcanoes, so you have a lot of different things in play here.
Okay, so my question is, they are more concerned with it slipping into the water than it exploding. Is that what we're talking about?
It does explode, and the last time that it did was just in 2017. But yes, they're more concerned about the collapse of the volcano into the ocean, and if it collapses, the tsunami that it would create affecting just so many cities and towns in Europe.
Okay, because, you know, my recollections are up the boot in Italy, and we're talking about Mount Vesuvius, and Pompeii, and of course we've done a couple of tours of Pompeii, and you know, look what happened to all those people there and how that city was buried. And of course we've been to the Big Island in Hawaii, which is one of our favorite places to go, and we've seen the catastrophe of volcanic action there.
Yes, and I wish I would have been able to see it when it was happening this time, because it looked so fascinating. By the way, just in reference to your point, at the next eruption of this volcano, that will increase the concern for this to happen. So it's not going to happen overnight right now, because the movement is moving, but it's not huge. But if you add an eruption to that, then you can have a catastrophe.
I get it.
Well, this story makes me really happy. And, you know, when we take Ubers, we always talk to the drivers, have a good conversation. Most of them are very chatty, and, you know, we learn about them and why they're driving an Uber. Well, you know, sometimes just fate has a way of just coming into your life. And back in February, University of Notre Dame student Michael Skinner, he called for an Uber to take him home from an event. And he's kind of a chatty guy, and he started talking with the Uber driver. And the Uber driver, Doug Anderson, when asked about his family, told this person about his daughter, his 11-year-old daughter, who he had adopted from China. And Michael Skinner was an engineering major, so he had some knowledge of things. And he was talking about his daughter and how she had been born with only one finger on each hand, and how she was embarrassed and couldn't use her hands, and that they had tried to get her fitted with prosthetics but could not, because the doctor said she would outgrow them and then they'd need new ones, and they couldn't afford to do this time and time again. So it was a real dilemma for them. And so he took up Uber driving to earn extra money in order to help his daughter with getting some prosthetics. Well, he was talking to the right guy, because this guy, and we've talked about this before, Ron, with the 3D machines that are making prosthetics.
Oh, yeah.
Had the connections.
Yeah, we have.
And he was able to get her fitted with a new set of 3D printed hands. Now she can throw a ball, she can write, she can blow bubbles, and this is just by an Uber serendipitous meeting.
Now, are the fingers and the hands stiff? Do they manipulate? Do they move? Is there dexterity? How do these hands work?
Well, I honestly don't know the answer to that. There is a video that we can take a look at and see how they work. But apparently they work well enough for her to be able to do and move the fingers because she's able to do all these things.
Well, if she's able to throw a ball, she's got to be able to grip something, right?
She's got to be able to grip.
Sure.
And writing and those types of things. So I just, you know, you just never know who you meet, which is why I love to talk to people everywhere we go, because people are so interesting and their stories are so interesting. And this is a really good news story.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, the 3D printing thing is amazing. Well, I have some good news. The kids are gone.
You know,
and it's not bittersweet. Okay,
sweet. Know it. Listen, I would do it again 100 times, and having them live with us for a year, it was. I would not say it was challenging. I think having three dogs was challenging for us.
Oh, no, the kids were fine.
Yeah,
the dogs.
They're wonderful.
Holy cow.
But you and I have spent the entire day cleaning, putting our house back together.
Trying to put our lives back together,
yeah,
to be honest with you.
And, you know, I mean, it's not that I'm happy they're gone. They live right down the street, so we're going to see them probably every day anyway. But the thing is, you know, to have all the extra food out of the pantry and all the extra clothes out of the laundry room.
And you get to have closet space again.
Yeah.
Right, which is huge.
Yeah.
You know, I spent, as you know, we've got this huge screened-in patio here in Texas, and I, with all the furniture in it, and I spent literally all day scrubbing and washing and just getting our favorite place to talk at night back in shape.
And I spent all day.
I saw you down on your knees doing the hardwood floors in the house.
And vacuuming the couch. I have never seen so much dog hair in my life. And really, you know, had a good idea, which I never did before. But I took all the cushions one at a time and I threw them in the dryer on fluff and I put some bounce things in there.
Yeah, you know, I thought that was a fantastic idea. I would have never thought about doing that, and they smell great when they came out.
Yeah, it got all the dog odor out and it fluffed up everything.
So that's a tip for our friends, huh?
Yeah, and it you know, and I tell you what, when I walk into our living room now, it just feels so much better because everything is. I don't have doggy footprints all over the floor.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, I would do it 100 times again. As far as
well, we love the kids. The
giving
kids
them
are
the gift of staying here.
And
but it's nice to have our
just the peace and quiet.
Yes.
And you and me and Desi, and it's so like right now. It's so quiet.
Yeah.
And I just love it. There's not dogs barking, dogs fighting, you know, playing fighting.
Yeah.
You know, having dog parties in the living room. I am so done with the dog parties. Okay. And now it's you and me and talking while married.
I love it.
I love you.